Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
What is up, everybody? This is a special edition of Inside Boxing Live. I am your host, Dan Canobio, coming to you on a Sunday afternoon after a wild weekend. The last big weekend in the boxing world. And it's funny because I was not planning to do this podcast. After Jake Paul knocked out Tyron Woodley, I said to myself, I am done with boxing for the next week. I have the week off for Christmas. I'm not going to think about the sport. I'm going to recharge the batteries. And now here I am, set up my microphone, because there's no way I can go a week without getting my thoughts out there into the metaverse. But what a weekend it was. Started on Friday night, and a few items that I want to get into before we take a break for the holidays. And it was Friday night, and it was Arthur Beterbiev and it was Marcus Brown. And I love this fight heading into it. I love a fresh, intriguing matchup. It was taking place in Montreal, which is a sneaky, really fun fight city. You know, one of the best 175 pounders in the world in Arthur Beterbiev, a guy that we had not seen in a long time. It's only his second fight in the last 2 years. Same thing for Marcus Brown, only his second fight in the last 2 years, too. And then Marcus Brown, on the other hand, you know, a former world title contender, obviously was knocked out by Pascal, but Pascal was on PEDs. Brown's got the Olympic background. He was training one-on-one with Derek James, a world-class trainer. Southpaw, I mean, everything that I just listed made me believe this is going to be a fun fight. And it's on Friday night, too. Terrible undercard. There's no doubt about that. Shout out to my guy, Corey Erdman, who was on the call, who got us through that undercard. And I call a lot of fights with Corey on the Broadway boxing scene. He's one of the best. He is one of the best broadcasters in boxing right now. And I'm not just saying that because he's my friend. But anyway, back to the fight. I thought the fight played out like I thought it was going to play out. I thought it was going to be Beterbiev coming out slow because he's a slow starter. And he hasn't fought in 2 months, and Brown kind of taking advantage of that and kind of jumping on Beterbiev. And he did. I think he outlanded him like 20-1 over the first two rounds before a massive cut from a headbutt. And I don't know what it is with Marcus Brown, maybe because he's a southpaw, but this guy finds himself in fights with massive cuts because of headbutts. But a cut opens up over the forehead of Beterbiev, and also Brown was cut as well. And that was in the fourth round. And I thought maybe like one of two things, either Beterbiev's going to be rough sledding from here on out because he's up there in age and, you know, it was a nasty cut, or he's going to see the blood and he's going to fight like a maniac. He's going to fight like the monster that he is. It was the latter. It was the latter. He really turned it on in the fourth and fifth round, started throwing those lethal combinations. And if go back and watch the replays of the combinations that Beterbiev was throwing, it was cold and calculated. Hit the look on his face and how slow and how quiet and how just that look on his face when he's throwing these combinations, just so calm. It just bop. It's like a battering ram. It's like, you know, like a George Foreman in a 175 pound body. It's not fast. It's not flashy. It's just relentless, a relentless attack. You know, threw about 50 punches around Beterbiev, which is way down from his average of about 67. But it doesn't matter because his hands are so damn heavy that you can only stand up for so long. Now he's 17-0 now with 17 stoppages. There's no other champion in boxing that has stopped every single, has 100% KO ratio. Marcus Brown was tough. He was, you know, he was game for about three rounds. I mean, that's kind of how I thought the fight was going to play out, but it was only a matter of time before Beterbiev, you know, started going to the head body. His trainer, who I don't have his name. I probably should, but I don't, told him to just go head body. It's pretty simple. A simple instruction from Arthur Beterbiev's trainer, and Beterbiev goes out there and goes to the body, goes to the head, goes to the body, and takes out Marcus Brown. Outstanding, bloody, everything you want in a big fight. And I think Beterbiev now has, you know, woken up. You know, he had that cut over his, you see the cut the next day, I posted it on Twitter. Looked like a damn baseball scene in his head. Looked like Frankenstein. Now he is 36 years old and going to enter this latter part of his career where he should cash in on some big fights. You know, he should pay, the payoff should be there for Top Rank and him. You know, he can fight Canelo, that's the name that everyone was talking about on Friday night on the Twitterverse and Saturday morning. You know, that's a great fight. I think it's Canelo's toughest test at 175. I don't know who wins. I think it's a pick 'em fight because Beterbiev has the two things that I think you need to beat Canelo. That's power and that's volume. Not that he doesn't really move a lot, Beterbiev. He didn't move much, you know, like Bivol, but he does come forward. He does have some movement. Didn't really jab a lot either. And like he had body, he had a body attack, Beterbiev, but it wasn't like a consistent body attack. You know, some of his knockouts came on body shots, but he wasn't dedicated to the body. Not that you need that to beat Canelo. You need power and you need volume, and Beterbiev has that. I think it's going to take a really, really special fighter to beat Beterbiev, and we have said for years now it's going to take a very, very special fighter to beat Canelo. If those two tangle at 175 next year, I mean, there, I know that there are some doubters out there whether Canelo would take such a fight like that. You know, the detractors of Canelo Alvarez will say that he's waited out his opponents, you know, Cotto, Golovkin. You know, even Kovalev was older and also had just fought Anthony Yard too. So I don't know. I don't know what Canelo does. You know, he's talking about fighting at cruiserweight. I thought that was some good reporting over the weekend by Dan Rafael that kind of went, got lost in the sauce, is that Canelo didn't even know about the Makabu fight until Eddie Reynoso, you know, put in the special permission to the WBC. I thought that was a pretty funny story. So Beterbiev gets the win at 175. There was another 175-pound fight this weekend. That was Saturday night on DAZN. It was Zerda Ramirez versus Yuneski Gonzalez. And I'm telling you what, man, light heavyweight Zerdo remains a good-ass time. I mean, he was pretty boring at 168, but not at 175. 175, he's become like this Mexican Rocky. He's just brawling out there. He was rocked early in this fight and chose to make it a firefight. Really good rounds from Zerdo now. This is two fights in a row where he's given fans exciting fight. The guy just turned 30 years old. He's intriguing to me on a number of ways. He's huge, first of all. He's very tall, over 6'2 or 6'3, throws lethal combinations, can sell tickets. Not a huge ticket seller, but just enough over in San Antonio. They had a nice crowd there. He's got the Mexican fan base behind him. And like I said, only 30 years old. He's the youngest of all the 175-pounders. I mean, this guy could be a problem. It's a really good problem to have in the light heavyweight division, which brings me to my next point. That's the light heavyweight picture. I think you can't deny that Beterbiev is the best. Whether you think he's getting up there in age, whatever. Good is 17-0, 17 stoppages. I think he's the cream of the crop at 175. Now, Beterbiev is aligned with Top Rank and ESPN. You know who else is aligned with Top Rank and ESPN that fights at 175 pounds and is a champion? It's Joe Smith Jr. That was supposed to be the fight. Remember last year at this time, we were all clamoring for it. We're all clamoring for Beterbiev versus Joe Smith. We said it was going to be the ultimate machismo fight. It was going to be two hard men getting in there. You know, Union Joe and Beterbiev, the monster, for a unification bout on ESPN. You know, put that damn fight in a meat locker. Put that fight in Atlantic City, Boardwalk Hall. Put it in MSG, the big room. That is a fun, fun fight. But all of a sudden, Danny Jacobs got into the picture and tried to muddy it. And, you know, there was the rumors of Joe Smith and Danny Jacobs fighting. Now it looks like Danny Jacobs is going to fight John Ryder, as Chris Mannix reported. I don't mind ever seeing Danny Jacobs fight again. That's a story for another day. But it seems like that maybe whole side of the deal is out. So maybe we can see Beterbiev versus Joe Smith next year. I know it's not the sexiest of all the matchups here. You know, it's not Canelo Beterbiev. It's not Beterbiev versus Bivol, but it's a makeable fight. We're talking about realistic, makeable fights. Put that thing on regular ESPN. Top Rank has shown that they will do that. So that's one of the things. That leaves the other two top guys at 175 right now to square off. And they just so happen to be fighting on the same network. That's Dimitri Bivol, who we saw fight last weekend, and that Zerda Ramirez, who we saw fight this past weekend. All four of these guys, too, are on the same fight schedule. Have you noticed that? They're all fighting within the same, you know, four weeks of each other. So this is all lining up. Bivol and Zerda, both aligned with DAZN. That's a fight that should be easy to make. Both guys, over 30, zero big fights on the horizon. They are years removed from their past or previous big fights. Pull the damn trigger. Stop waiting for Canelo. You have a chance to make some big fights at 175 in your 30s when you should be making big fights. And you can make your own fortune. You can call your own shots. If you come out on top, who knows? We can see an undisputed at 175. We can see a more unification bouts. Let's say Better BF gets past Joe Smith, and let's say whoever wins between Zerto and B-Ball, probably B-Ball, he's going to be favored in that one. So B-Ball versus Better BF at the end of the year. I mean, who knows what can happen at that point? It's all there. The light heavyweight division is much like the lightweight division right now, where there are fun, interchangeable fights where you can, you know, make a case for each guy to win. That is all you can ask for in the boxing world. Some other news that went down over the weekend. This happened late Saturday night when there were a lot of people still over the hysteria of the Jake Paul matchup, which I will get to at the end. It's Errol Spence and your Dennis Ugas is approved by the WBA. This is good news, my friends. This is good news. Errol Spence is back after that eye injury. His fight with Pacquiao, obviously off over the summer. That was a bummer. We were people talking about whether we were going to see Errol Spence ever fight again. Well, if he does come back, it's going to be a year from now, and it's probably going to be a soft touch. That was put to bed once again. Errol Spence and soft touches should not go in the same sentence because the guy just doesn't do it. After his car accident, he could have fought anyone. He fought Danny Garcia and beat him pretty damn easily. Obviously, have another setback, so it's going to be over a year if he gets back into the ring since that Garcia fight. But good. This is good. One of the top five or six pound-for-pound guys, and Errol Spence is back, and he's in a three-belt unification bout with Ugas. Now, this whole narrative of Ugas, he should have to play the games that WBA was putting out there. He would have to fight two mandatories, Stanonius and then Budiev, after beating Manny Pacquiao. Not a unification bout. The WBA, with their whole title consolidation cleanup, their whole anti-corruption cleanup, and Ugas was going to have to pay for it. After beating Pacquiao, he was going to have to fight two, let's be honest, up-and-comers, who guys that, yes, they have names, but they're not established by any means, and not fight Spence, who's just waiting there under the PBC banner with two belts. Come on, it was a no-brainer. And not only that, the WBA was allowing Murata to unify with Triple G after not fighting for years. So there was a lot of double standards being here. So I'm happy that Ugas gets the payday. The guy deserves it. Arguably beat Sean Porter, beat Jamal James, you know, have beat Manny Pacquiao. Guy has a lot of good wins on his resume. He's a great story. He's universally respected in the boxing world. And now we have a unification bout at welterweight, three belts on the line. This has been the year of the unification in 2021. Eight unification bouts, three undisputed bouts. Now we get another one to kick off next year. It should, they're saying early spring, maybe April, late March. It's going to be a pay-per-view. Going to be a Fox pay-per-view or a Showtime pay-per-view, whatever. It's going to be a pay-per-view no matter what. Let's be honest. That's going to 100% be a pay-per-view viewing. Unfortunately, this means we're not going to get Terrence Crawford versus Sean Porter next. Not that I thought it was going to be next anyway. But if Spence gets through Ugas, which is not going to be easy, this makes a potential Spence-Crawford bout for all four belts at 147. I know we shouldn't get into the games of the belts and these organizations. You know, Spence versus Crawford without any belts on the line is still one of the best fights you could possibly make in boxing. But Spence versus Crawford with four belts on the line, undisputed, that makes that fight even juicier. And it maybe makes the fight even, I wouldn't say easier, but it maybe potentially clears some of the hurdles. Because at this point, you know Crawford wants to be undisputed. You know that Spence wants to be undisputed. If Crawford still has that last piece, the WBO belt, you know, Spence is more likely to go for it. You know, at least to the public perception, Spence is nonchalant. He can take it or leave it if he fights Crawford. But we know deep down inside he wants to fight him. We know deep down inside he wants to be undisputed at 147 before he moves on to 154, before both guys move on to 154. So that fight, Spence versus Crawford, potentially the second half of 2022, when I thought the fight, that's when it was going to be all along, that could be for all the marbles at 147, man. That would be epic. But where does this leave Terrence Crawford now? What is next for Terrence Crawford? You know, is he going to wait until the summer? I don't think he can afford to do that at his age right now. He's in the prime money-making part of his career. He can't wait for a fight that he doesn't even 100% know he's going to get with Errol Spence. Could he take on a Virgil Ortiz, who is highly ranked in the WBO, who is his mandatory. Will the WBO order that? I think it's a winnable fight for Terrence Crawford. Man, it's that would be something if they did that. I think they won't. I think that Crawford wants that Spence fight, and he's not going to try to mess that up. As much as he says he'll fight anyone, anytime, anywhere. How about Regis Progre? How about someone like Regis Progre versus Terrence Crawford? That is a winnable fight for Crawford. It is a marketable fight. I don't know under what platform it will be on, because we don't know. As of now, Terrence Crawford is no longer under contract with Top Rank. Regis Progre has like 1,500 different promoters and managers. Last I heard, he's signed with ProBellum. The both of them were in Dubai, Terrence Crawford and Progre, this past weekend, hanging out, talking about fighting each other. Would not be shocked if it's Terrence Crawford versus Regis Progre. Another name out there, Castillo Clayton, who was once highly ranked. The guy had a draw with Lipinets. I thought he beat him. We could see Crawford with that type of fight, which would, let's be honest, Castillo Clayton's a really good fighter, but that would be kind of like a stay busy type of fight that's still somewhat of a challenge for Crawford. Don't think it's going to be Boots Ennis. You can forget about that. It's not going to be Keith Thurman, because Thurman is fighting February 5th against Mario Barrios. That card was officially announced. That's going to be a pay-per-view. We'll get to that when we need to. But that is the deal with Errol Spence, your Dennis Ugas. We're starting to see some clarity in the welterweight division. It's one of the only divisions where there were a lot of moving parts. But, at the end of spring, we're going to have one of these guys, unless there's a draw, is going to have three of the belts at welterweight, and it's going to be the ultimate, shot caller at 147. Spence, I still believe that Spence is the shot caller no matter what. He's going to be the A-side. If he does fight Crawford, he's going to be in total control at that point with three belts and four consecutive pay-per-views for Errol Spence. Quickly, before we get to Jake Paul and Tyron Woodley, there was an unbelievable heavyweight fight on Saturday afternoon here in the States. It was Saturday night over in Manchester, England, on the zone. Joseph Parker and Derek Chisora. I thought Parker looked the best he has looked in years. Shout out to Andy Lee, his trainer, had him coming out there fighting fast, had him throwing combinations, despite the fact that Parker put on about 10 extra pounds of muscle. Fun fight. I mean, Parker had Del Boy, or what is he going as these days? Del Boy or War Chisora, whatever. Parker had him hurt in the first, had him really hurt in the second. But there's something about Joseph Parker, as much as I want to praise him, you have to kind of say, man, do you have that killer instinct? I know you make these cool TikTok videos with your family and you're a cool, chill, nice guy, but what's that killer instinct? You could have got Chisora out of there early on in that fight. It was numerous rounds where Chisora was absolutely hurt, and it was kind of bizarre in a way. Dropped three times Chisora, and on two of those occasions, Chisora got up and walked over to his corner. It was weird and assumed the position in the corner like a hurt dog. And then Parker would just kind of tee off on him, but not go all the way. They went the distance, but it was a really fun fight. It was like an appetizer for the rest of the night. It was probably the fight of the weekend. It wasn't the event of the weekend, because the event of the weekend goes to Jake Paul and Tyron Woodley. Good Lord. Saturday night, Showtime pay-per-view. The main event was, man, I thought Jake Paul was about three rounds away from the jig possibly being up. The fight was boring. The fight was not exciting. It looked just like their first fight, which was not exciting either. This would have been two consecutive decision wins for Jake Paul when his entire allure is knockouts. The longer you watch Jake Paul fight every round that goes on, the more you can see how much of a flawed fighter he is. And that's just how it is. The guy just picked up the sport. He throws 25 punches a round. It's not really exciting boxing. It's everything but the boxing when it comes to Jake Paul that's exciting. The thing that he has is power. I will give him that. And in the sixth round, when we're on our way towards another boring decision, where we're going to have to say, is this kind of up for Jake Paul? I mean, how's he going to manufacture interest after two decisions to Tyron Woodley? He detonates a freaking bomb from the clouds. I mean, the fight was in Tampa. Jake Paul wound up in Miami when he started that punch and landed on Woodley, who bit on a feint and just ate a punch. When you're 39 years old, your punch resistance is shot. Your trigger is shot. Woodley's always been like that to begin with. It's even more now at age 39. And he hit the deck like I haven't seen a fighter hit the deck in years. Flattened, absolutely flat on his face. Scary moment. He ended up He got up and was fine and was able to talk to Ariel Helwani right in the ring after. But this was a real revitalizer for Jake Paul. I know there's a lot of people that don't care. I'm intrigued by the business side of things. I'm intrigued by the marketing side when it comes to Jake Paul, how he invents these fights, how he markets them. You know, it's almost like WWE in a way. Like, how it's a storyline with Jake Paul. It's not just, you're not just ordering a Jake Paul fight to watch a fight. You're buying into the whole circus. You're buying into him calling out UFC guys. That's another thing too with this fight, is that it kind of revitalized the whole Jake Paul versus UFC fighter, which I thought was gone. You know, after he beat Askren and after he beat Woodley now twice, I thought that chapter would be closed when it comes to Jake Paul fighting UFC guys. I thought maybe he'd maybe transition into fighting like boxers. You know, like that's what Tommy Fury represented. But I tell you what, from reading tweets and talking to some of my buddies that were there, you know, Marcus Villegas from Fight Hub said it was a very much a UFC crowd. It was very much an MMA crowd. Masvidal was there for a reason. You know, Nate Diaz was there for a reason. I understand they left like right after the knockout or right before. I mean, that's a statement in itself. That means they care. They put out Masvidal put out some weird video where he's like in some type of red light telling Jake Paul to come over to MMA. These guys want that fight. Like, why wouldn't you want that fight if you're Masvidal or if you're Nate Diaz? You're at the end of your rope. Excuse me. My headphones just fell. You're at the end of your rope, Nate Diaz. You only have one more fight left with the UFC. Masvidal has lost his last couple of fights. I mean, why not get that golden parachute that Woodley just got? Two fights with Jake Paul. That's pretty much what it is. That's what it's all boiled down to. But yeah, you're going to hear those are the names you're going to start to hear. You're going to hear Masvidal. You're going to hear Nate Diaz, who still has one fight left on his contract. Even Conor McGregor is not that crazy right now. That's what that knockout did last night. It breathed all new air into Jake Paul. It got people upset. It got people mad. It got people happy. Every type of emotion. That's what Jake Paul experience is getting people pissed off, making people laugh like myself. And that's what it is. Look at it. If you look at the trajectory of Jake Paul, which is going up, and Conor McGregor stock, which is going down. They're going to meet. Conor McGregor and Jake Paul could meet. That's how kind of bad it is for Conor McGregor right now. It's not out of question that those two get into a boxing ring in the next, you know, 12, 18 months. That is a huge fight. Any way you want to slice it, that is a big fight. But I didn't think I would have to address the whole, you know, is Jake Paul good for boxing? What does it mean for boxing? Are YouTubers taking over boxing? But no. That's not the case. Look around. There's only one YouTuber in boxing. It's Jake Paul, and he's kind of weaved his way into boxing seamlessly. I mean, you just saw it. I mean, we just watched three great months of boxing, right? The last 3 months, from October, Wilder Fury, until this weekend, there were great fights every single weekend. I think a hardcore fan, which is not exactly who's watching Jake Paul fights, could see that this isn't good fighting after you watch 3 months of good fights. But it's an experience. The real power in boxing comes when you can draw a crowd, draw interest. And there is no doubt that Jake Paul does that. He had the entire sports world either watching that fight or reacting to the knockout on social media. Everyone, Patrick Mahomes, you name it. Brooks Koepka was there in the crowd. You had people that never would talk about it. People are hitting me up. More text messages I got last night and early this morning about Jake Paul and Tyron Woodley. Then it's probably around the same as when I got when McGregor fought Mayweather. That's the type of pull and attention that Jake Paul's getting right now. You know, there were about 18,000 in attendance in Tampa, which is insanely impressive. Did good on pay-per-view. His last fight did over 1 million buys on Showtime pay-per-view. They're looking smart for making that investment. But Jake Paul is a celebrity. I've said this a million times. Jake Paul is a celebrity. Celebrities are good at marketing. Jake Paul is using boxing as a vehicle to make money. Where else can you make that type of money in one night as a solo artist, a solo performer? Maybe in the musical act? But I don't think Jake Paul can sing. I don't think he can dance, or he'd still be on Disney Channel. And he can't really box either, but he can punch. And he knows how to market himself. And that's what it is. It's crazy that we still have to say this again and again and again. But I think last night just kind of brought more eyeballs to it. Same questions are coming back. Like, how is this possible? How is he able to do this? you know, how is he a real boxer? Is he ever going to fight a real boxer? That's he's just playing right into everyone's hands right now. Jake Paul is just on top. He is one of the biggest attractions in boxing. I mean, it was a professional fight, so that has to go into the knockout of the year candidate, which is insane. You know, he's one of the best ticket sellers. He is the only guy, if you believe that the last pay-per-view did over 1 million buys, he is one of the only, he is the only fighter to do 1 million pay-per-view buys this year. And Canelo reported number was 800,000 with Plant. We don't know 100% if that's true or not. Don't want to get into pay-per-view numbers because I feel like we just left that behind with Gervonta Davis for the last 2 weeks. I'm pretty sure Leonard Ellerbe right now is tweeting at fans furiously telling us how much of a star that Gervonta Davis is. Damn, he is going to tweet through it, Leonard Ellerbe. But that is it. Those are all the topics that I wanted to get to. I did not want to go a full week without getting that out there. It's an exciting time, even when we thought that the schedule was going to die down a bit. You know, we had big news, whether it was the Spence Ugas news, big fights, exciting stuff, lightweight division, obviously really intriguing, but there's obviously kind of sucks that the Triple G Murata fight is off, which was supposed to be the 28th. I'm pretty sure if I read correctly, Ioka found a replacement fight. I don't know where that's going down. I have to check the headlines on that, but there will be boxing on Christmas Day this year in Newark over on Fox. Vito Milnecki will fight over on Fox. That should do a good number because, you know, by Christmas night, you're all settled in on the couch. So you're done eating. Gifts are done. And you're kind of just sitting around looking for something to watch. So I think that will do a really, really good rating. And there's New Year's Day boxing over a Fox pay-per-view. You got Luis Ortiz. He wants to go by Luis now versus Charles Martin, a heavyweight bonanza. Let's see if there's going to be fans there. That's another thing that I'm keeping an eye on with the new variant, the COVID variant, raging here in New York, especially. It's raging all over the country and all over the world. I don't think we're going to have fights being canceled. If anything, I think we'll see fights going back behind closed doors. Bubble boxing might be a thing. Interesting that we thought the Better BF Brown, I was convinced that that was either going to be canceled or behind an empty crowd. So that was encouraging, I would say, because we don't want to go back to bubble boxing, but we also don't want to see no boxing at all. So I think any fan out there would gladly not want to see a stoppage. But, you know, the bigger fights, the bigger names won't be happening until the end of January. I think January 22nd, Virgil Ortiz is supposed to come back. Supposed to see Mikey Garcia, Francis, what's his name? Vargas, Jesse Vargas and one of the Liams are fighting in late January. And then we're seeing the Thurman fights February 5th. So there is some time to kind of see how everything plays out with the variant, but also, you know, there's going to be a massive surge during Christmas and we might not see the ramifications until late January. So that's something to keep an eye on. I know a lot of people don't want to talk about that anymore, but you know, it's something that you do have to monitor. That's really it. Thank you so much for tuning in all year long. We're gonna have one last big show of the year, December 28th. I'm gonna sit down and have our official Inside Boxing Live CompuBox TV year end show. It's gonna have some quirky awards, we're gonna have some stat related awards. We're going to look ahead to next year, take a look at each promotional company and take a look at boxing as a whole, what we can see in 2021, fun guests. That's coming at the end of the year. And that's it, really. You know, it was a good year. I'm not going to get into too much about what we saw this past year, because that's going to be next week's episode. A fun weekend, just when we thought the boxing schedule was, this weekend on paper didn't look like it was going to be that fun, ended up being one of the better weekends of the year too. We saw a lot of women fights too. I think 2022 is going to be a big year for the ladies in the boxing world. Thank you so much. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas to those that celebrate. Stay safe out there. It's rough out there right now. Be safe, be vigilant. Don't get sick. If you do, get better fast. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been another edition of Inside Boxing Live. We will see you next time.